a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. A quick thank you to Bob and Ruth for hanging out and talking. Again, if you live in the Whitman-Hanson area, big vote coming up this Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Just want to give a little love to our sponsors before we get to our prime time. Our headliner tonight, who's sitting here hanging out with me, Jerry Thornton, will be up in just a half a second here. But we got some great folks who sponsor this program. Tiny and Sons Glass, Life Care Center of the South Shore. We have a Century of Care, and also McGuigan's Pub. McGuigan's Pub, great sponsor. I just want to let you know, they got a big 5K run that's going to be benefiting a bunch of local charities coming up on Sunday, June 5th. And road race is, as always, a great time. It's been, I want to say, the times that we've had Richard on, we've talked about where it was one of those featured road races, a great post-party, a post-race party that they're going to have. There are going to be raffles, there'll be awards, and a good time. Listen, you can't say McGuigan's Pub without knowing that you're going to have a good time, and the 5K race is going to be a great time. If you want to find out more information, www.mcguigan'spub.com. That's how you can register online. So get right to it if you're somebody who likes to get out and run. Now, joining me is a good friend, a gentleman that you hear right up the dial, and he actually sped down here. He might have broken a few laws on the way here, but that's okay. We have a good friend, Jerry Thornton, and he's not just a talk show host. He's not just a guy that you see on Comcast Sports. He is now, drum roll please, he's an author.
A published author, I like to say.
A published author.
And yes, by the way, Route 93 now is like Fury Road. I just ran everybody off of it.
Wait till it's a toll road.
Yeah. There's a lot of carnage in my wake. But you know what? I made it here to Marshfield, this bucolic little burg on the South Shore next to my hometown. So, yeah, it's great to be here, man. I appreciate you having me.
And we're here to talk about From Darkness to Dynasty, the first 40 years of the New England Patriots. That's kind of, if I could ask just out of the box, why did you pick the first 40 years? Because, I mean, the last 15 have been kind of fun, too.
Yeah, well, because what this book is about is...
The foundation.
It's about the dysfunctional history of the Patriots.
The Dick McPherson years, the Rod Rust years.
Everything, when they were, like, the worst franchise in all of sports. And, you know, I think it's for, you know... You know, sometimes you say you put history in a title and there's a certain segment that's going to roll their eyes and say, you know, it's going to be guys with long beards and, you know, hats on with buckles on them and stuff. No, it is not that. If you are of this current era, this unprecedented decade and a half of success, this will be perspective for you of why Patriots fans are the way they are today, why we're so, like, enamored with this team, why we're so defensive about it. And if you're older than that, and if you live through some of this, it's a compendium of just how bad they were, how they were laughing stocks off the field. They were the worst team, you know, on the field. Their stadium was the worst. Their owners were horrific. You know, players that came through here that were combinations of bizarre and criminal behavior and all this stuff. And then there's an element of me growing up as the kid from Weymouth rooting for that team that was the, you know, the shemp of the Boston sports scene that nobody cared about. But I grew up in a Patriots first house. So in a lot of ways, Kevin, it was a labor of love, but I think also to just show people and give people an appreciation of just how bloody good we have it right now.
How did you study? I mean, did you, in the beginning, was it anything like that? Was it a matter of, or is it a reflection of when you first were cognizant of the team and as they played, you remembered?
Yeah, well, it's, the book really came about in two ways. One is I was contacted by an agency in New York. This is years ago when I was still with Barstool. Okay. And just said, hey, would you be interested in writing a book? And they're the same people, Writer's House, that signed like Stephanie Meyer, who wrote the Twilight series. I mean, they're legit. And would I be interested in writing a book? And I said, well, yeah, I guess in the abstract, I've always kind of wanted to. And we were trying to decide what it should be. And the reason we came up with this is because I said, I've always wanted to read this book. And since no one else was writing it, okay, I will. I'll jump on the grenade and I'll do the heavy lifting. So really, it does go back to the beginning, but it starts with the time I met Billy Sullivan. Billy Sullivan, the founder of the Patriots. Mm. And, you know, you think a guy who's been an NFL owner, this is going to be an impressive guy, right? I mean, they used to say the Senate was the most exclusive men's club in the world. There's 100 senators, 32 NFL owners. So I'm going to meet this powerful guy, this titan of industry, this visionary. And he's just kind of an ordinary, nice old Irishman. You know, met him at a golf course, friend of my father-in-law's, two affable old Micks giving each other a hard time about their swing. So I then looked back into his history and how he came about founding this team. And the short answer, Kevin, is the buy-in for the AFL was $25,000.
That's a drop in the bucket. I mean, if you think of it now.
Yeah, and he had saved money for a Cape house for him and his wife, and he put that up. And then he brought in other investors, like Dom DiMaggio, Red Sox legend.
Sure.
And basically was too broke to run an organization from the very beginning. So it gets into that. Interesting story that I hadn't realized. The genesis for him starting the Patriots wasn't, gee, I want to start a football team. He had previously worked for the Boston Braves, okay, a baseball team, moved to it, Milwaukee, now Atlanta. He gets somehow this idea, he gets hooked in with this brewing company that wanted to open a domed stadium to bring in National League Baseball. Now, he thought National League Baseball back in Boston was a terrible idea, but he loved the idea of the stadium. Now, a domed stadium, Kevin, with luxury boxes and personal seat licenses and all these things that, now this was 1958, 59.
Right.
The Houston Astrodome was the first domed stadium. It wouldn't open for another 7 years. So in the late 50s, talking about these things would be like being in the 50s and you're talking about an iPhone. Like, people, what? But this guy had this...
Ahead of his time.
And one thing led to another. It was going to be for the Red Sox. He was trying to keep a lid on that. The Red Sox were on board if they kept it a secret. It ends up on the front page of the paper. So the Red Sox go wear out. But that just kind of led to, in this roundabout way, him wanting to get a football team. And like I said, he was
Boston
one of
Patriots,
the original
right?
eight in the AFL.
It was the Boston Patriots.
Boston
at
Patriots
one time.
And for their first 11 years, they played in Harvard Stadium, mm-hmm. BC one time. The stands burned to the ground. They had a home game in Birmingham, Alabama. They had another home game in San Diego against the Chargers, but it was a home game for them. And again, this is the team now, kind of a little bit ahead of my time, but that was the team that people around here were forced to root for in this, you know, fledgling league where at least other teams had stadiums to play, and the Patriots were living this nomadic existence, basically living out of tents with their suitcase packed at all times.
And it's funny you mention that, because I want to say is back in the day, and I heard stories from uncles that, you know, before the Patriots, they would follow teams like the Giants.
The Giants, right.
They would follow the Giants, because that was the team that was the closest to being, you know, regionally near Boston.
And it's why I grew up hating the Giants, by the way, because when the Patriots are not on, and they still do it to this day,
KT. Yep, they put the Giants on, yeah.
It's the Giants. Yeah. And we all have friends who still haven't gotten that recessive Giants gene out of their system. It's like one of my best buddies, his dad was a Giants fan. He's a Giants fan. And like, we can't talk about the Giants on the air without him texting me going, "Go Big Blue! Giants rule."
G-Man.
G-Man, you're killing me. So, that is still there. And to the point where, I mean, the Patriots were so on everybody's back burner. This is a true story. I think I was like 9 years old. I went as a Patriots player for Halloween. Now, again, this is Weymouth.
Who are you?
Right? I'm not in Omaha, Nebraska. I'm not living in Seattle. Weymouth, Massachusetts. Right. A guy around the corner from me, a grown man, says,
"Who are you?"
"So you're supposed to be Joe Namath?" I was like, "Joe Namath? Like, what the hell? Like, Patriots logo, Patriots uniform." I threw his candy in the yard and said, "I hope his dog chokes on it." I'd eaten his crap. A little 9-year-old, angry little Jerry Thornton. As I started writing and getting into the research, the reason I just told that story is because my agent was reading the proofs and saying, you know, and I see there should be more of you in it. Like, it's not autobiographical, but I hope that anybody that remembers those dark times will be able to appreciate just the
feeling frustrations. Feeling the same
way. Right.
Feeling the same way.
And when they
Jimmy Plunkett years, come on.
Oh, gosh. And when when they finally got their own stadium, and it was the first pro sporting event I'd ever seen. I think most people, their first game is like a Red Sox game. You go with your dad and, you know,
it's
whatever.
Like going to a high school football game, for crying out loud. You're sitting on those aluminum benches.
And I distinctly remember walking in there with my older brothers, took me in, and I walked in and I thought, oh, this is that place, you know? Yeah. I watch every Sunday, you know, and you've got the Dallas Cowboys and the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is the same league. And I'm finally going to see this, Kevin, and my little fresh-faced, you know, apple cheek boy, and I went walking in and I said, I'm just a kid, but this place is a dump. What the hell? It was like an Eastern block construction, yeah. and those benches that just sucked the heat right out of your body. Even if you went in September, you were miraculously cold because of those, and they were a terrible team as well.
All right. We're gonna take a small break, but when we come back, more with Jerry Thornton talking about his new book that'll be out, hard copy, come out September 6th, From Darkness to Dynasty, the First 40 Years of the New England Patriots. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
There is nothing more caring and compassionate than giving the gift of life. Hi, this is Edward Sparandio, Marketing Director at Life Care Center of the South Shore. This Friday, May 20th, from 8 to 1, we will be teaming up with the American Red Cross for our second community blood drive. Come join us, help people in need. We are located at 309 Driftway off 3A in Scituate. For more information, call me at 781-545-1370. Thank you.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9watd.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back for the final segment of Monday Night Talk. Of course, Jerry Thornton staying with us through that abbreviated break. And again, we're talking about his new book that is going to be hitting the bookshelves in Barnes & Noble, Amazon.
Your independent booksellers everywhere. And it's available for pre-order now on Amazon. And also, audiobook. There will be an audiobook of this. Yeah, for those of you who...
If I'm driving along, I could be able to check it out.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there were two companies that made competing bids. One wanted me to actually read the audiobook because, you know, I have such a pleasant speaking voice.
Absolutely.
Or whatever. It's going to be read by somebody else. I'm holding out for Morgan Freeman or Kevin Tachi.
Oh, my goodness.
If
no,
I can't get,
Morgan Freeman is...
If
I, mean,
I can't
come on,
get him.
Listen, you and I share a kin... we share a love for Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah,
I don't think anybody loves that movie more than you two.
And how great would it be to have him like, I will never forget when Steve Grogan first started for the, you know?
That would be awesome.
I don't know what he charges or if he's available, but he'd be worth it.
He'd be worth it.
I still don't know what those two Italian ladies were singing about. Fact is, I don't want to know. I like to think it's something so beautiful. I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah,
but
yeah,
I think, you know what? You being a, you know, being a split rate or cut rate Morgan Freeman might work. I like what you were doing.
Okay,
you're
that's
gonna,
it. I'm going to have
many,
to revisit.
But how many pages are you going to have to do it for?
Oh, yeah. You know what? If it stays permanent, so much the better. We would all like that.
What was the easiest part of writing this book? And what were some of the challenges in writing it?
Well, some of the challenges is actually the easier of the two questions, because just wanting to make sure that you got all the facts right, because I think we all tend to have different recall of things. You know what I mean? Like I had to go through so much, because you don't want to be that guy who puts your name to something where you've got the date wrong, you know what I mean, or that was an entirely different season of and so on. So the easiest parts to write.
No, we fixed that in edition three. I swear we did.
Yeah, exactly. Because you know the world is out there. I mean, you know, Joseph Goebbels helped write Mein Kampf, so he was the first grammar Nazi. and I want to run afoul of that crowd. So the easiest part was just the parts where you get to speak from the heart about what I remember, where I was during the big moments, whether it was when I was a little kid and they got jobbed out in Oakland. The 76 Patriots were the first team I ever truly fell in love with and became a permanent sports fan because of them. And they got absolutely robbed. I remember what that felt like. I was sitting in my living room on a gorgeous August night with my brothers when all the normal, well-adjusted kids were out playing in the street. We were watching preseason football and saw what happened to Daryl Stingley. For people who don't know, the worst cheap shot in the history of sports. He never walked again. He died sadly a few years ago. Yep. And what that was like. And then going further, like personal recollections of being like a college kid now when they went and got crushed by the Chicago Bears and so on. And
hey, they were up 3-0 in that game.
Yeah. And then by the time, you know, in the book, not to give away the ending, but I'll give away the ending, it ends when they finally met success. And by then, I had, you know, a kid with me sitting on the couch at my friend's house next to me watching the Patriots finally break through and win a Super Bowl that to this day is one of the five most improbable championships in the history of sports at any level. And you know, and so it's in that way, I hate to use the word journey, Kevin, but it's growing up loving this team that was a mutt, you know, that was a mangy stray dog that somehow like imprinted on me the way Jacob imprinted on Bella's baby in Twilight. How's that for a reference?
Well, almost like there was a time when they were like, remember when the Tampa Bay Buccaneers first came into the league? They were that team that couldn't win.
Right, yeah. They 0-14 their first season, lost their final game to the
Patriots.
Wasn't
until they changed the uniforms that they found the winning formula.
Yeah, and how about this? There are people that will constantly harp on Bill Belichick, the GM, and he doesn't know how to draft or whatever. Okay, here's a guy who has built a dynasty drafting towards the end of the first round or years like this, not even drafting in the first round. The Patriots of my misspent youth had the number one overall pick five times. One of those times they drafted Drew Bledsoe. The other four, they either traded it and squandered it, or they drafted really badly. Irving Fryer is an example who figures prominently in the book because, you know, again, number one overall pick, once crashed his car at halftime, fleeing the stadium. Another time,
how do you do that?
Remember another time he cut himself in a kitchen accident?
Oh, sure, yeah, I
which
definitely
was
that.
Not a kitchen accident. It was his pregnant wife stabbed him in a restaurant in front of other people because he told her, I'm not taking you to Miami with me for the AFC Championship game. That was number one overall pick. The Patriots, everybody. The team that can't even draft when they're the first people drafting, and they did it time and time again.
Well, you know, we sit here and we talk about that, but, I mean, you could be like the Boston Celtics, the team that, you know, When it comes to the ping pong balls falling, you can't get that first pick.
Dave, yeah, exactly. The Patriots.
And if you do, something terrible happens.
And the Patriots earned their picks the old-fashioned way by being really horrible. And still, time and time again, with the exception of Drew Bledsoe, who was terrific, just couldn't capitalize on it. One of the times they had the number one pick, they traded it to to Dallas to Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones, who ended up drafting Russell Maryland.
Yep.
And I defy you to find anybody the Patriots got in return for it. But that's again, is how it was. It was so fly-by-night, just mismanaged. For instance, Upton Bell. Radio, the guy that I grew up listening to on the radio, never was a fan, hates me. He always trolls me on Twitter. He was the general manager of the team. He wanted to fire the coach one time. Billy Sullivan caught wind of this through the press and said, what? He doesn't have the right to fire the coach. So Upton Bell says, well, I wouldn't have taken the job if I couldn't decide who's going to be my head coach. So they made a deal. They had one game left in the season. The coach would be fired if the Patriots lost. If they won, he was going to stay. In other words, a general manager of a National Football League team was openly rooting against his team, hoping they'd lose so that he could fire the coach.
Guy, right?
And they won it on a last-minute 88-yard touchdown throw to Randy Vataha. He then later on in another season accidentally made every single player on his roster a free agent because he didn't send out a letter that retains him, which was a pro forma thing that everybody did. He got a call from one of his players' agents going, hey, thanks a lot. What? You made him a free agent. That's great. I did? And he had to sign everybody on the team for a premium without anybody knowing about it. Again, the New England Patriots that I know and loved.
But I'm definitely looking forward to this. This sounds like,
thanks, man.
A fantastic. And your co-host Michael Hawley wrote the foreword.
Yeah, well, that was
how did you get him to do that?
Begged and pleaded. I wanted somebody whose writing style I liked, that I trust, that I have a kinship with, and he's a great writer. I mean, I imagine you've read. Patriot Rain and War Room, another great one. The Teddy Bruschi's book,
and I also when he wrote for the Globe,
yes,
love following his stuff,
and just a bright guy, and I mean just with a genius for recall, and I read the foreword, and I have to say I was really really touched by it, but I appreciate that he got it. You know, he gets. Who I am, who I think most Patriots fans are, who I know you are,
yep.
And where we're coming from, all this,
defending that wall.
During a time of where they are front and center, the number one highest profile team in not the highest sport in America, but the highest thing in America, like number one on every pop culture list in our world now is the NFL, and the Patriots are the center of that wheel. And up until 2001, they were rarely, if ever, relevant. And it's an amazing time. And I think anyone who's going to read this is going to come away appreciating just how lucky we have it.
Any thoughts as to a follow-up, or is it a matter of just seeing what happens with this book?
Yeah, I in theory, yes. As Michael told me, though, people who write books are crazy. It really is. It's a ridiculous amount of
this
work.
This is an admission of guilt, folks.
Yeah, I'm not a fast writer anyway, and I agonize and I go over. I sit there every time I write a sentence and say, okay, I know what the cliche would be. What's the other way to say it that hasn't been said before, and so on? Haven't said that. Now that it's done, I'd be interested in it. I don't know what that next book would be. Maybe the next phase of the Patriots. The Great Deflategate book hasn't been written.
Goodness.
If I want to dive into that. But a great famous author. I wish I could. It was a female. I wish I could remember who she was. But she said, I hate to write, but love having written. And now that I've got this thing that I'm actually going to be able to hold in my hand, and it's not 10 million blogs or, some goofy thing I wrote about, Gronk, getting interviewed by some local reporter. I'm going to have this thing that's going to outlive me, and I'm proud of the work, and I hope people enjoy it.
And I just want to definitely congratulate you. I'm going to thank you for coming and doing the pre-interview before the book is out on the bookshelves, and folks are able to buy it or listen to it. Of course, we're holding out for Morgan Freeman, hopefully.
Yeah.
If you're listening. Or Kevin Tocci. We'll see what happens. But if folks want to find you out there in social media, I'm sure Twitter, you get your fandom out there.
At Jerry Thornton 1, I've got a starting a dedicated Facebook page, and I'll have my own website soon. I'll get you the URL when it's all set up.
And of course, you can always listen Monday through Friday, starting at 4 p.m.
At 2.
2 p.m.
Yeah, 2 to 6.
2 to 6. I'm sorry. Why did I think 4 p.m.?
I don't know. It's the drugs that you've been doing?
It's
the Percocets, clearly, Kevin. Kevin doesn't take Percocets, everybody.
It's a great Jerry Thornton. 2 p.m. Monday through Friday. We are off until next week at 6:15 p.m. Have yourself a great evening.